This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll start today with Stephanie Pollack. She's the Commonwealth's Transportation Secretary, and she joins us in the studio to talk about the future of transportation under the Trump administration, about all-electronic tolling, about the MBTA here in Massachusetts, and much more. She'll also take your calls. So what is your question for Transportation Secretary Pollack? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. And if you'd like, you can watch our conversation on Facebook Live. Go to facebook.com/Radio Boston to watch the feed and submit questions there. Secretary Pollack, it's great to have you back on the show.
It's great to be here.
So first of all, I do want to start at the federal level for a moment because we can't really escape that we just have had a history-making election. And as you might recall, during the campaign, then-candidate Donald Trump, you know, talked about having a 10-year, $1 trillion program to rebuild the nation's infrastructure, highways, tunnels, bridges, airports. You know, say that actually happens. It's a giant if in Washington. But, you know, could any of that have an impact on Massachusetts?
Absolutely. You know, transportation and transportation investment have historically been a bipartisan or nonpartisan issue. One of the relatively small number of things that Congress was able to agree on in the months leading up to the election was a 6-year transportation funding plan. So we already have a lot of assurances around federal funding levels. And this is after like 24 short-term extensions of the old rules. So I think that a lot of us in the field are optimistic that we are going to be able to make progress because, you know, everybody wants to see our infrastructure be upgraded. And I think everyone understands that it is one of the most fundamental roles of government, no matter what your other perspectives are on what government should or shouldn't do. But one of them is building infrastructure that then allows companies and communities to prosper.
But on the other hand, the federal government hasn't really done anything to really fix the Federal Highway Trust Fund, of course, that relies on the gas tax, the federal gas tax. That hasn't been changed in more than 20 years. So these sort of some of the fundamentals in terms of paying for major infrastructure and transportation projects, do you see any optimism for our ability to do that?
I mean, we'll obviously have to see what the specific solutions are, but there's a lot of there's a lot of different ways to approach it. And if there's really a bipartisan consensus that we need to be doing more, hopefully there'll be some innovative ideas that'll come up.
Well, let's take it down here to the level of the state of Massachusetts. The Green Line extension, a more than $2 billion project. Remind me how much of that comes from or is slated to come from federal funds?
So we have a signed full funding grant agreement with the federal government, the Federal Transit Administration, that provides just under $1 billion. And we have been actively working with the Federal Transit Administration to meet all the conditions that are necessary to unlock that money and actually award a new construction contract and get going again.
Do you know if and when that might happen?
So actually, this morning, I was over at the transportation building with a group of major contracting companies who were coming to hear about the procurement and the bidding on that. And so we're moving ahead with a new procurement. We're moving ahead with putting a new management team in place because we know that the last one was not managed properly. And those are among the last preconditions that we will need to work with the federal government on. So we definitely expect to see tangible progress in 2017.
The beginning of 2017?
Well, I mean, we need to, again, we won't be back in construction probably in 2017 because we got a lot of work to do on design and permitting and funding and procurement. But we'll be building the team and working with the feds and getting everything back on track, assuming that the new design stays within the funding resources that we have available. It had, as you may remember, skyrocketed up to about $3 billion, and as a $3 billion project, we can't build it. But as a $2.3 billion project, we absolutely can.
Is there any chance that the design could cross over outside of
that?
Well,
that's what we're working on now. But I think that we have a high degree of confidence that we're headed in the right direction.
So let me ask you, I mean, January 2017 takes us into the Trump administration. Is there any part of you that has any concern that this agreement with the federal government could get undone by the next president?
I don't expect that to be a problem.
You sound very confident.
You know, there is a long history on these kinds of big projects surviving changes in administration. Major infrastructure projects as I said, have been bipartisan, and they also take years and sometimes decades. And folks in Washington are well aware that you can't keep changing the rules all the time. And so there's a long history of projects surviving changes in administrations, including, you know, the Big Dig. Hmm. Went through a bunch of changes in administration. The money came.
Well, tell us a little bit about the person who's been named as the new manager of the Green Line Extension, John Dalton. He was just hired this month,
yep.
Right? And former manager at the Chicago Transit Authority. What does he bring? Can he help us get the Green Line Extension
built? Well, I think he can, because the federal funding program that we are using to build the Green Line Extension is called the New Starts Program. And one of the concerns that the federal government has had in terms of releasing the funding is, have we built a management team that can succeed this time? Because the last one didn't. John Dalton successfully managed not one but two New Starts funded projects for the Chicago Transit Authority. And so he is a known commodity at FTA. He understands that program. He has delivered these projects on time and on budget. And that's one of the most important reasons why we brought him on board.
Yeah. You know, when he got hired, there was a little burst of news around the fact that the T was also saying that it believes some of its senior managers are actually underpaid and that senior management should get higher wages. I mean, obviously, anything around salaries at the T always attracts attention and controversy. I mean, what do you think about that?
Obviously, it does attract controversy. But on the other hand, if we want to fix the T, and that is kind of fundamentally one of my most important jobs as transportation secretary, not just deliver the Green Line, but fix the T, we need to pay what the market is. And the T has actually historically not paid what fellow transit agencies do. The other thing on the Green Line specifically is he's managing a $2 billion plus program. It is way, you know, 1, 2, 3% over budget is way more than this gentleman's salary is. So if we can hire a management team that will manage it to budget and schedule, we will save far more than we will spend by investing in talent.
Mm. And his salary is $280,000 annually. I mean, are there things in his contract that encourage him to get this thing done?
Yes,
on time?
There are performance incentives as well, and we're excited about that because that's not historically how we pay public sector folks, but the private sector does it all the time, and we want him to be invested in succeeding.
Mm. We're speaking with Transportation Secretary Stephanie Pollack. If you've got questions about the Green Line Extension, about the MBTA as a whole, or maybe about all electronic tolling that has come to Massachusetts, or anything regarding our roads, our bridges, and our trains, call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Secretary Pollack, let's step back here for a minute, because you know I always like talking to you about the MBTA as a whole.
Yep.
It's obviously still got a lot of problems, and I just wonder what you would say to people who... Okay, the Green Line Extension is one thing. It's got a plan, a budget, and a deadline. But the whole rest of the system still isn't serving Eastern Massachusetts the way it needs to in order to propel the state and the economy, you know, further into the 21st century. Is it possible we would ever get an MBTA that Massachusetts needs?
Absolutely, it's possible. People deserve it. People demand it. It's not going to happen overnight. You don't fix. Not years, but decades of underinvestment and underplanning by, you know, waving a magic wand and getting everything to work. But, you know, the New York City subway system was in terrible shape, and they put together an investment plan and brought in new leadership and brought it back. And we're going to do the same thing at the T. It's too important not to get it right. And I actually appreciate the fact that the vast majority of our riders have been really patient and giving us the room that we need to sort of dissect what's gone wrong and understand where we can make the most effective investments that will result in people seeing concrete improvements in service in the shortest time frame possible.
What about privatization? Because the T recently agreed to pay McKinsey and Company, what, $1 million to look at ways to save money, which might include privatization on some bus operations?
So, you know, what's interesting is outside of Massachusetts, privatization is one tool in the toolkit that every transit operator in the United States has. We are actually the only major transit operator that doesn't at least look at the possibility. And let me give you an example. The MBTA needs to fix the system it has faster. Historically, the T only runs one major construction project weekends during the construction season. So we close a part of the system and we go fix it and we run a bus diversion. One of the reasons we only do those one at a time is we don't have enough buses or bus drivers to do more than one at a time. So if we can contract out for weekend substitute bus service so that we could fix two or three or four parts of the system every weekend starting next spring when the construction season starts, we'll get it fixed faster. So privatization is not just about, you know, taking the whole system and privatizing it. What the legislature gave us the ability to do is use it strategically. We have privatized the cash room because the T's not in the business of moving money. It's in the business of moving people. Bank of America doesn't run its own cash room. It contracts it out. So we need to get the T out of businesses that are not their core businesses, and we need to give them the bandwidth to deliver good service to people.
Are there areas of the T that you would not like to see privatized?
You know, right now, the T runs five different services. It runs trains, subway trains, buses, commuter rail, ferries, and a paratransit service called The Ride. Three of those five are not only privatized, they have been privatized. There was never a T-run commuter rail. There was never a T-run paratransit system. Two are not, the buses and the subway system. So to me, the issue is not whether it's run by the private sector or the public sector, or if the workforce happens to be on a private payroll or a public, it's what's the most cost-effective way to give great service. And if it's public sector employees, we should use them. And if it's private sector companies, we should use those. And that's what we're really doing, is sorting out what's the best way to provide each, not just each service, but each subcomponent of what the T does.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned it's the ride, the ferries, and the which other one is?
Commuter rail.
Commuter rails. Well, so all three of them have had major problems, though.
All three of them have a higher on-time performance rate than either the buses or the subway system.
So you're comparing them to the buses and the subway system, but, you know, what about all the massive failures that commuter rail has had in
recent
years?
Every part of the system has problems, but what I'm saying is the privatized parts do, but so do the parts run by the public employees. That's why I say the issue is not public versus private. It's productivity, it's reliability, and contracting out is a tool. It's not a silver bullet, but it is a tool the T lacked, and now it has it. I actually think that the control board and the management team have used that tool very strategically and in a very limited way. They've had that tool now for a year and a half, and they've only done a handful of contracts. This is not about a wholesale ideological war on public sector employees. This is about having an option that didn't exist before if that's what it takes to get the job done.
Well, we're talking with Massachusetts Transportation Secretary Stephanie Pollack, and you won't be surprised to know that a lot of people want to talk with you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Rick, who's calling from Marblehead. You're on the air, Rick.
Yes, talking about contracting out services, particularly commuter rail and Keolis. I've read in the paper how you have not collected, or have actually probably waived, fines or for not performing under their contract, particularly finding late service or delayed service. Can you tell me how you justify not collecting the provisions that are provided for in the contract recently, and then what are you planning to do in the future? Are you just not going to collect the payments that are due for late service or not performing on time?
Rick, thanks for your call.
It's a great question, Rick. Every month we fine Keolis hundreds of thousands of dollars under the contract, but your point is exactly that. We have to fine them under the contract, and the contract excuses certain performance lapses. So, for example, and this actually just happened yesterday to the Green Line, if the police in a community stop the trains and say, don't run the trains, we're doing a police investigation, we can't, under the contract, we can't fine Keolis because their train was late. So for every single train that's late, every single month, we go through the contractual provisions, and when we are contractually able to fine them, because it's their fault, we absolutely do. And when the contract itself provides that it is not a situation that Keolis is accountable, we don't find them. But I don't want people to think that we are just sitting around waiving all responsibility. They have been fined every single month since they have been the operator, and they have been fined to the extent, the maximum extent that the contract allows us to fine them.
But it was, what, just last month that State Representative William Strauss, who's the chair of the legislature's Transportation Committee, he called for the state to reopen the contract with Keolis because he thinks it's flawed.
So we have met with Chairman Strauss, and we are taking a look at the contract, and we have actually made changes in the contract that are designed to help increase the accountability of Keolis and the reliability of the service. So the contract is an 8-year contract. It was negotiated before I became secretary, and I'm not going to tell you it's perfect. I think it's actually much better than the prior contract. And I can tell you that despite all the frustration that people see, and I am a commuter rail rider, so, and I ride one of the lowest performing lines, the Worcester-Framingham line, so this affects my life. There's a long way to go on the operations, but on average, this operator is actually doing a little bit better than the prior two operators. It's a tough system to run. And remember, the T, not the operator, is responsible for the coaches and the trains and the tracks. And sometimes when the system fails, it fails because the infrastructure fails, not because the operator fails.
Well, that gets us to a bigger problem then as well. But let's turn to Nicole, who's calling from Hyde Park. You're on the air, Nicole.
Hi, good afternoon. I had a question in terms of contractors that work with the T. There have been some concerns that the T has not made an effort to hire minority contractors or vendors, and that does not represent the community at large. I'm wondering if that's changing or if an effort is being made.
Nicole, thank you for your call.
So it's really important for us to try to take the resources that are invested actually both at the T and at the highway department, at the transportation department, and make sure that as a certain proportion of them actually goes to disadvantaged business enterprises. And we've actually started separately a program just for all small businesses. So we are trying really hard to make it easier for people to get some of that work. We've looked at things like breaking contracts into smaller pieces so that more different kinds of businesses can compete from them. We've been doing fairs. We've been doing outreach. If folks have suggestions for how we could do a better job, we absolutely want to hear them, because we are actually spending more money on the T than we've historically spent. And while the ultimate purpose of that investment is to provide people with great service, it's also a great opportunity to have as many different kinds of companies as possible getting a piece of that investment and employing people.
Well, let me ask you a different equity question here, because as you know, the Boston Globe reported recently about cancellations on the Fairmont line. They reported that for 5 straight days last month, the 625 train was canceled. Altogether, some 17 trains on the Fairmont line were canceled in a month. So riders were frequently stranded. And I mean, that line was meant to give greater access to some communities in Boston that didn't have it before. I mean, are you concerned about equity in terms of the service provided to Fairmont line riders?
Absolutely. It's a really important service. I mean, every service we provide is important, but that's a community where in many cases, if the train is canceled, folks may not have another option. They may not have a car sitting in their driveway. They may not have enough money in their wallet to just grab an Uber. We have told Keolis in no uncertain terms that that was unacceptable. They have stopped canceling those trains. There is an investigation into what they did. They have been meeting with the community as well as the legislatures that have raised a concern. But the underlying problem was not a desire to deprive that community of service. The underlying problem was literally not having enough locomotives and coaches to run the full schedule. And so they had to cancel somewhere, and they made a poor decision on where to cancel. So we've addressed that. But quite frankly, what we're really concerned about is making sure they have enough locomotives and coaches, because it's not really that much better if they just cancel somebody else's service.
Right. Well, let's move to roads for a minute, if we can, because we've got about 4 minutes left here. I want to ask you about the all-electronic tolling on the turnpike, because the toll booths are gone. And in fact, if I have this right, they all were removed a week early. You're allowed to celebrate, I think, a little bit.
Well, then I will, because I will tell you that the men and women at MassDOT, at our contractors, and at the state police did a spectacular job. This was months, years of planning for a very brief period of time in which we needed to get the new system on and the toll booths down so that before the winter, before people's heavy Thanksgiving travel, we would have the turnpike in a good enough condition that they really would be able to travel. I also happen to drive the pike pretty frequently when I'm not on the commuter rail. And we gave ourselves until November 21st to finish the initial stage of removal, and it actually was done November 10th.
Wow. Well, we have had several listeners talk to us about what they believe are disparities in the new fare structures, the toll structures. One example we have is a new toll for drivers getting on the pike at exit 16 in West Newton. They'll have to pay 70 cents more each way. That's one of the largest increases. I mean, do you think that there are inequities in the new toll structure?
You know, the gantries were located by a public process where there was public comments before I was secretary, and by the time I came along, we had to work with where they were. That gantry actually represents a toll that was taken down years ago.
Right.
And so it doesn't make my neighbors in Newton happy when I tell them this, but yes, they're paying a little more now. They also went a decade without paying anything, while those of us who got on at exit 17 did pay.
Okay. Well, so I also, just in general, I love asking this question, even though I kind of know the answer. I mean, one of the criteria by which tolls were supposed to have been removed entirely from the Mass Pike was that the road needed to be in a state of good repair. That's obviously never going to happen. Is that ever going to happen? Or, I mean, are tolls going to be part of a driver's experience on the Mass Pike forever?
Like a lot of transportation assets and roads and bridges in Massachusetts, there hasn't been a great system in place to actually understand the condition they're in and have a plan in place to invest in them. So we've put a lot of effort, not just on the Mass Pike, but statewide, in managing our assets, understanding where the paving condition is bad, where the bridges need to be fixed. We're investing those dollars. Will we ever get the whole system into a state of good repair? I don't know the answer. Will we get it into a much better state of repair? Absolutely. We are spending 80% of a $14 billion five-year transportation investment program on fixing the assets we have instead of on expanding capacity.
Hmm. Well, in the last minute or so that we have here, I understand that the American Association of State and Highway Transportation Officials had an annual meeting in Boston just this week. What's the nature of the conversation going on amongst your peers? I mean, is there excitement? Is there concern about the future? Because as you said at the beginning of our conversation, I do think that one area in which there is strong bipartisan support is that the transportation infrastructure of this country is definitely not up to speed, sorry, pun not intended, as much as it should be to support the economy.
So there was a lot of talk about the excitement about that infrastructure is kind of on the front burner and people are talking about it because, of course, that's what everybody at these meetings lives for. They represent the heads of the state transportation departments. So we talked a lot about having a new six-year transportation bill passed for the first time in, you know, years. We talked a lot about the possibility that there would be more. And we talked a lot about some of the issues we've been talking about, which is kind of buckling down and fixing the assets we have and getting them in better shape so that we can give people a more reliable way of getting where they need to go.
Well, Stephanie Pollack is the Transportation Secretary for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It's always great to have you. Thank you so very much.
It's always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.